Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Podcast.
Podcast. This podcast is brought to you by Podcast. Podcast. Big corporation. Giving us a lot of money. Just kidding. You freaks are streaming us money. This is a great episode with Godfrey Bloom. Some of you Bitcoiners may recognize him from an epic rant in EU Parliament railing on central banks. He did some of that during this episode too. Before we jump into the sponsors of this show, had to give a shout out to the freaks who boosted RIP 447 Biowarfare in the 21st century with Sam Husseini. Highly recommend you guys go check this out. Very important episode, the information that we dove into. At Paez, 10,000 sats. Marty, I started listening to you and fell in love with your takes on Bitcoin and society in general. The episodes you have made with different medical experts and journalists have been so groundbreaking and important that in my humble opinion, TFTC is one of the most important media programs on earth today. Wow. You've provided medical experts with information that has changed my whole approach to my health and helped me heal long COVID. Love to hear that. Thank you and all the guests you have that speak the truth. Thank you, Paez. And I'm glad that you're getting value out of the show. Truth for the commoner. We're trying to get the truth out there. We're trying. At Blockchain Bug, 5,000 sats. Great chat. Only two boosts of the episode with Sam. Not getting a lot of love on YouTube, Logan. Not even 1,000 hits on YouTube yet. Highly recommend you guys go check it out. We may be getting deprioritized by the algo because of the hot topics that we covered. But we're on to this episode with Godfrey. It was brought to you by our good friends at River. River is here building a Bitcoin company and a Bitcoin exchange the right way. They build their own infrastructure. If you DCA into Bitcoin, you're not going to pay any fees. They have the best spreads in the market. So other exchanges, if you DCA, have high fees, higher spreads. River has no fees and the lowest spreads in the industry. On top of that, they built, again, their own infrastructure. So if you do hold Bitcoin on River's exchange, it is backed one-to-one, fully reserved in a two or three, or excuse me, I don't know the quorum, but it's in a multi-sig cold storage wallet. However, they encourage you to take self-custody of your Bitcoin. They don't want to hold your Bitcoin, but if they do have to, it's going to be in multi-sig cold storage. They have human 24/7 support. So if you need to contact somebody and you want to talk to somebody about problems or questions you have about River, they have somebody that will pick up the phone and talk to you. They have River Lightning services. If you're building a Lightning app, want to plug into it. So go sign up today. Go to river.com/TFTC. Set up an account and you get $5 worth of Bitcoin. That's river.com/TFTC. This RIP was also brought to you by a good friend down the hall, Unchained. Unchained is here building things the right way too, leveraging Bitcoin's native multisig properties to give you a suite of products. They have their Vault product, which is a 2 or 3 multisig wallet in which you hold two keys. Unchained holds one. It's a collaborative custody model so that you have a better security setup and then peace of mind knowing that there's somebody there to help you out and you don't have all the risk by yourself. They have their lending product, which is 2 or 3 multi-sig. You put Bitcoin up as collateral. You hold one key. You have visibility into that wallet so that you know that your Bitcoin isn't being lent out to the Three Arrows capitals of the world. As long as you're paying that loan back plus the interest, you're going to get your Bitcoin back at the end of the day. They have their IRA product, which allows you to roll your IRA into Bitcoin and hold your own keys. Again, another 2 or 3 multi-sig product. They have a trading desk that allows you to buy and send it straight to your vault. Go check all this out. They're building the financial platform under of a Bitcoin standard at Unchained. Go to unchained.com/consultation. Just set up a consultation. You don't have to ape in any of these products. Just set up a consultation, learn more about them, see if it fits your needs. Go to unchained.com/consultation and tell them the TFTC sent you. Last but not least, this RIP was brought to you by our good friends at Bitcoin Talent Co. It's a recruiting firm built by Bitcoiners for Bitcoiners. If you're a company in the space looking to hire talent, Bitcoin Talent Co. is there for you. They know everything about the protocol level, multisig, mining, lightning, whatever you need. They are experts on finding and acquiring the best talent for you. They will understand your needs. They'll go headhunt for you. They've done it successfully from companies like Unchained and many others in the space. They also have a flex program, product. So if maybe you don't want to bring on a full-time employee, but you have a few sprints that you need to make on the design side, on the engineering side, on the growth marketing side, the Bitcoin Talent Code team is building up a roster of individuals that can participate in that flex product. So if you need a 3-month project done, you can tap Bitcoin Talent Co. and their flex workforce on the shoulder, get them in, get them out, save some money, not have to go through the hassle of hiring a full-time employee and taking on all the cost and time that comes with that. So go check it out at bitcointalent.co. Tell them the TFTC sent you. And then alternatively, if you're looking to get into the space and partner and work, with the best Bitcoin companies, and you're on the talent side, set up a profile today so that you can get in the mix. BitcoinTalent.co. Tell them TFTC sent you and enjoy this episode with Godfrey. Okay.
You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, All the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
And we're live. Godfrey, thank you for joining us.
Great pleasure and pleasure. Thank you for asking me.
Well, I was very excited when you sent that tweet out a few weeks ago saying, all right, if anybody wants to have me on their show, please email me. Because I was just explaining, this is a Bitcoin podcast, and within the world of Bitcoin, I think once every 6 months, I see a video pop up of you in the UN Parliament, or maybe it was the EU Parliament, railing on central banks and the dangers that they present to the world. So thank you for doing that. I think it's a very important message to get out on that particular stage, because I think in the world that we live in today, a lot of the problems that people want to thrust on red team versus blue team here in the United States, or left versus right issues, really at their core are central banking issues. We messed up the money, and that is having profound negative externalities on the rest of the world.
Absolutely. The left versus right thing is passé. It's, you vote blue or red, but it doesn't make any difference. It's the same in our country. You vote blue or red, although it's quite reversed. The point is, you get the same deal. It doesn't matter who you vote for, you get the same deal. They're all run by central banks, the World Economic Forum, the WHO, the Bank of International Settlements, all these people. We live at once was referred to as by Mandelson, one of Tony Blair's henchmen, as we are now in the post-democratic age. And I think we are. We're in the post-democratic age. It doesn't matter what the man on the Clapham Omnibus thinks. And our man on the Clapham Omnibus is your Joe Sixpack. They're the same beast. And they have been disenfranchised. There is nowhere for them to go. There's nobody for them to vote for.
No. And it seems like the problems that this uniparty presents globally are only getting worse. You mentioned the WEF and didn't mention it, but the things like Agenda 2030 and this move towards net zero carbon emissions. I mean, that's one thing in London that's really been a big theme the last couple of months with these ULEZ cameras that are spinning up to curb people's driving of diesel fueled cars or cars made before 2005. I mean, in London, it seems like that forcing of certain actions is really taking place. And you have, luckily, this this theme of Blade Runner is going around and cutting down these cameras. But
we're taking them down as quickly as they put them up.
So
last, it seems that the ordinary Joe has had enough. The only way to deal with it is to get out there, get out of your house, roll your sleeves up, take your jacket off and do it. There's no point in signing petitions or voting. If you don't want these intrusive cameras, which is against our constitution. Many Americans think we don't have a constitution. We do have a constitution. It just isn't written in the same way as the American constitution. They are illegal. It is our duty to take them down.
Yeah. And do you think there's something particularly that's happened in the last few years? I mean, obviously we had the lockdowns and a lot of people are pushing back against that, but it does seem that Joe Sixpack here in the United States and the omnibus, is that what you refer to them?
Well, yeah, the man on the Clapham omnibus. It went into law in the 1930s. It was a legal judgment. Of course, we have common law, a not dissimilar system to your own. And the judge made a definition. It was one of the first read definitions since 1688. And he said, justice is what is deemed to be fair to the man on the Clapham omnibus. And that's what justice should be, that the ordinary man deems to be fair, not what some clever lawyer or crooked judge, and most of them are political appointees now. It's what do you think? What does an ordinary good citizen believe to be fair? That's at the heart of both our justice systems. And that's what's been abandoned.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, in the UK, I'm not going to lie, I'm a little bit worried because you had that bill, that privacy bill that was passed recently, I believe last week or the week before, finally got through Parliament that allows the government and the intelligence agencies to inject, or I think it mandates that companies providing end-to-end encryption services provide backdoors to that end-to-end encryption, which completely negates the whole reason for having end-to-end encryption in the first place. So they're attacking your right to movement, your right to privacy. Why are these governments and these supranational organizations like the WEF really pushing to control people, whether it's how they move or how they interact with each other and communicate with each other?
It's a most extraordinary phenomenon that one wouldn't have believed could have come about in either our country or yours. It passed easily through Parliament. Our amending chamber, which is the House of Lords, has been infiltrated by Jobsworths, journeymen, men on the take. The House of Lords has been destroyed as an amending chamber. And of course, they go to royal assent, as you probably know. Our laws have to be given the royal assent. So when they've gone through Parliament as a bill, they become law, they go through the House of Lords, and they need to be signed off on a constitutional monarchy basis by the King. The King, of course, is a devotee, if not the leading member, certainly one of the leading members of the World Economic Forum. So our King has been corrupted. So we have a whole legal system, a whole parliamentary system, which has been corrupted so that a bill and a law of this nature could go through so easily when, again, as I say, it is completely against our constitution. The 1689 Bill of Rights, the Toleration Act of 1689 have not been rescinded. These statutes which are coming through now are illegal under our system of government.
So with that being the case, does this leave open the door for civil disobedience on the part of corporations who this really targets, as the corporations have to add these back doors? Do you think they could ignore this law and
be... Well, no, because the corporations are part of the game. The corporations are owned by BlackRock and Vanguard. They're part of the game. The corporations will just comply, because what we have is a fascist system. And I don't use the word fascist in a pejorative term, Marty. I'm using it as a system of government, which we had, of course, in Italy and in a mutated form in Germany in the 1920s and 30s. It's fascism. What is fascism? Fascism is simply an arrangement between politicians, banks, and big business to dominate the country. That's how it works. That is fascism, where that is put ahead of the rights of the individual. It's a political system, and it's a political system which is favored a lot in Europe. The French favored it, the Germans favored it, the Italians favored it, the Portuguese favored it, the Spanish fought a civil war over it. They rather like it in Europe, and it's what the European Union is. The European Union is fundamentally fascist in its approach. And of course, if you're at the top table, fascism's jolly good. You make lots of money. Your country now is and has been run for some time by the Industrial Military Congressional Congress. It is utterly, deeply corrupt. Your constitution was abandoned years ago, decades ago. One might almost argue 100 years ago, in 1861, you could make a historical argument for that. So we both live in countries which had very good cast-iron constitutions which have been abandoned, and you can't take legal recourse because both our Supreme Courts have been politicized. Everybody who sits there has been put there by a politician. They are political. So you don't have your difference between your judiciary and your executive. That's the problem that we have. How, if it isn't direct action and revolution, if you will, how can that possibly, how else can you possibly get anything out of the system? You have to take to the streets. The thing is, with the British, it's not something we do lightly. The British don't do that. Neither does your nation do that lightly. The French do it at the drop of a hat, but we don't. The Anglo-Saxons don't do it. So your Joe Sixpack, broadly speaking, is a law-abiding citizen. My man on the Clapham Omnibus is a law-abiding citizen. They don't go to the barricades. But I think one day they will, because one day they're going to have to.
Well, I guess that's a big question. Is that day coming soon? Because it feels like the immense weight of this fascist melding of corporatism and the state is reaching such a point where Joe Sixpack and the man on the Clapper, the Omnibus, are both feeling the pressures, where it's energy prices, food inflation, just the quality of services, the NHS over in the UK and here in the United States, our healthcare system seems to be becoming more and more deprecated by the year. It seems like those pressures, whether it's price inflation, lack of energy security, or lack of quality services in regards to healthcare, are really beginning to materialize to the point where it's becoming abundantly clear to Joe Sixpack that something has gone terribly wrong. But that word revolution, for some reason, whether it's in the UK or here in the United States, comes with a negative connotation. People are almost afraid of it. They don't want to get to that point because I think people intuitively and subconsciously understand if you're truly in a revolution, things get pretty hairy and things have gotten bad, and people don't want to admit that it is necessary in this day and age.
Yes, you're quite right. And that's something that, of course, the establishment, deep state, as you call it over there, that's something that they rely on. They rely on that. They rely on our goodwill and our appreciation of the law. But nobody, of course, goes to the barricades, do they, on a full tummy. When they're hungry and they can't afford to live their lives, then things could change.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the, it's becoming more and more of a theme, inflation. The amount of videos you see of people complaining about their grocery bills, their gas bills at the tank. But again, going back to central banking, people are misdiagnosing this problem. They don't understand that we've messed up the money globally. They think it's policies put forth by the red team or the blue team that are really driving this inflation, which maybe, yes, they do contribute to it, but at the core, it's a central banking issue. And that is something that, again, the entrenched sort of superstructure, the deep state, the elite, if you will, the Davos class, really does a good job of sort of hiding that problem and never bringing it up. It's always framing problems left versus right, not pointing at the money.
Yes, and of course, if you go back, I think you can go back 100 years, no more than 100 years. You could go back 150 years, and it was, I think, Nathaniel Rothschild who said then, all those years ago, It doesn't matter who you vote for, who controls the money. And it was as true then as it is now. The difference, of course, is that the money is being degraded. So control of the money is one thing, but to totally degrade the system of money is another. Because, again, it's another form of disenfranchisement. So the paper money in your pocket isn't worth anything over the years, and consequently you can't buy anything, you can't protect your family, can't feed your family, can't educate your children, so on and so forth. Inflation is caused by an excess of money, which is printed, of course, by banks and sent and guaranteed by central banks, who's a lender of last resort. And of course, central bankers are selected by politicians. And we have this fabrication in Britain, of course, that the Bank of England is independent. It's absolutely laughable. When the governor of the Bank of England is a political appointee, and of course, it's the same with the Fed. This is a whole political game. And if you're at the top table, you do very nicely. And if you're not, you slowly starve.
Yeah. In your mind, obviously you've been ahead of the curve in identifying the central banking particularly as a problem. What is the solution in your mind to the central banking problem?
Well, first of all, it would be helpful if we had people who understood it, who aren't part of it. So it would be helpful if we had a mainstream media who understood it. There are almost no serious financial journalists in the United Kingdom. There are two who come close. One is Alistair Heath and one is Liam Halligan. But none of the others even understand the system. They don't understand the problem. They think inflation is some sort of act of God. It's some sort of tsunami that nothing can be done about it. It's just an extraordinary phenomenon. They don't understand it. But they don't understand what money is, the role of money, the medium of exchange. None of this they understand. So consequently, they do not know how to put questions to senior bankers or chancellors of the exchequer, as we have over here. They don't know how to put the questions. But of course, the chancellors of the exchequers, the politicians and the frontmen don't understand it either. So even if you put the right questions, they wouldn't know how to answer them. So this is the kind of problem they have. What can we do about it? Well, I'm afraid there isn't much we can do about it, the way things stand at the moment, until the whole system collapses. Excuse me. And if it collapses, then, of course, they will have to reset it. But if they don't understand why it went wrong to start with, all they'll do is reset the whole thing again just as badly. And if you go back to 2007, 2008, the collapse of Lehman Brothers, so on and so forth, we didn't change anything. We didn't change a single law, a single concept of central banking. We just shored it up with taxpayers' money, printed money, and degraded the currency. So in 2007, we didn't make any changes. So we find ourselves in 2023 with exactly the same problems, only on a significantly greater scale. It's now on an enormous scale with numbers, Marty, that people is beyond people's human imagination. You know, what is what is 4 quadrillion? I mean, I haven't got a bloody clue. And I've been in the financial world all my life. I don't even know what it means. These numbers are just huge. What shadow banking? And I, in my book, tried to explain shadow banking. I think I could have done a better job, but I had a go at it. Because it's not just what the Fed owes or what the government owes or what the Bank of England owes or not balancing the budget. It's the stuff which is off budget, off balance sheet, which are trillions of dollars again, servicing the debt. This can't last. This must collapse. And, of course, the BRICS countries are beginning to notice it. The BRICS countries are now getting together, trying to get out of this loop with the dollar as a reserve currency, which is a dreadful and ghastly mistake to start with, giving one country, any country, the ability to run a reserve currency were the kind of crooks and gangsters that politicians mainly are in both our countries. In fact, all countries. Yeah, not just both our countries, all countries. So what can be done about it? All you can do, in my view, as a citizen, as an ordinary citizen, is try and get yourself out of the loop. Get yourself, if you can, out of the system. Don't have any money in a bank. Don't have money in the bank. Of course you need enough money in the bank to pay your bills. You need the medium of exchange of the day to buy your milk and your butter and your bottle of beer. You know that. Of course, I know that. Everybody knows that. But if you've got any more than that, get it out of the system. Get it out of the system. Get it away from those banks and those political crooks.
You're speaking our language here. I mean, that's why we focus on Bitcoin. It is this apolitical protocol that allows you to remove yourself from the system and take your money out and put it in a distributed system in Bitcoin in the network. And that's why we do what we do here. I completely agree with you. We need more people to recognize that there is a problem and there are solutions out there, where there's Bitcoin. Some people prefer gold, but there are solutions out there. And that's the big problem. I think the brain rot that John Maynard Keynes has left on this world over the last century and a half is truly significant. People are fish in water. They don't understand that the monetary system is messed up. We have people like Paul Krugman saying debt is money. We owe ourselves. There's no problem. Just issue more debt. Our kids will take care of it. But that's the really nefarious thing, is just setting up future generations for failure off the bat because of all this debt. I mean, you mentioned off balance sheet liabilities. I mean, the national debt that's quoted here is $33 trillion. But if you include things like Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, it balloons to a quarter of a quadrillion quite quickly. And it's just removing yourself from that system, I agree, is the only solution. And on that note, like, have you looked into Bitcoin? What are your thoughts on Bitcoin generally?
Well, just picking up on one or two things you said earlier, and you look at Keynes, and if you look at Krugman, and you look at these gurus which dominate the thinking universities, we now have a third generation of Keynesian economists. Of course, fundamentally running on a wrong theory. It is the astrophysical equivalent of believing that the sun goes round the earth. It's just plain wrong. But you have to be, well, third generation economists to have escaped anything like that. So I've lectured at Durham University, Cambridge University, Oxford University, some of the major institutions who look at you quite blankly if you talk, for example, about Austrian school economics, that they all believe that debt doesn't matter, that savings doesn't matter, and all these things which has got us into this terrible problem. And of course, if you take it reductio ad absurdum, if you take Krugman at his word, why, one would have to ask him, if printing money doesn't matter, if printing money is fundamentally a good thing because it increases consumption, and that is the Keynesian view, that consumption with debt is good, which of course is absurd and nonsense. But if you take that view, why would you leave it to a central bank or a commercial bank to do that for you? Why don't they give us a machine that we can put in our attic or our spare bedroom and print money when we need it as a family? It would be very popular. I need a new car. I'll just type it out upstairs on this machine because the government have got it. The government have got a system which prints money. They've given it to me. Why would I bother to go to work? I don't need to go to work. I can type it out on a machine. I can. What is the natural progression of this thought is ridiculous, that debt doesn't matter. Debt has to be serviced. Debt has to be repaid. And if it can't be repaid, the system will collapse. But these people have ruled the roost for so long it's become received wisdom. And this is the problem. Now, when you talk about Bitcoin, yes, excuse me, I don't hold Bitcoin at the moment, but I have. What do I like about Bitcoin? I like about Bitcoin because it's done what I want it to do. It takes it off the table. It takes it out of the control of the central banks and the clearing banks and out of the hands of politicians. It gets it out of the system. So to that extent, I like Bitcoin, or I like the way Bitcoin is the target, the direction Bitcoin is going in, I like. However, I am a gold bug, and I have been for many years, for the simple reason that in this country, Bitcoin has one or two problems. It has a legal problem, and that you cannot claim the provenance of Bitcoin in this country as being yours. Now, you can with gold. You can say, this is my pile of gold sovereigns, or this is my little gold brick, my one, you know, whatever it is, worth X, Y, Z, and that is mine, and I can prove the provenance of it. Now, you can't prove the provenance of Bitcoin under English law. Somebody can come along and say, where did you get it? We don't believe it's legitimately yours. We believe it's not legitimately yours, and therefore we intend to confiscate it. And this is they can do under the legal system in this country. I don't know about America. I don't know about America, but that is the system we have here. So consequently, it's a fundamental weakness. The other fundamental weakness, which I hope is temporary, don't forget, I'm a supporter of Bitcoin. I think Bitcoin is a good thing. I do not believe what junior hodlers say, and I get correspondence on this, that somehow gold bugs and hodlers are somehow in different camps or against each other. It's absolute nonsense. We both agree on the fundamental same things. We've chosen a different path. We've chosen a different path. The destination's the same. We've chosen a different path. And we must both respect each other's paths. The other problem that we have, of course, is as yet, not enough people will accept Bitcoin as a medium of exchange. So if I want to buy a new car, I have to turn it into currency of the day, fiat currency, and buy the new car with that. That is the problem that we have. It's not an everyday total 100% transactable commodity yet. It could very well be, and I hope it is, and I hope it's sooner rather than later. Now, if I go to, let's say I've got a gold sovereign in my pocket, which at the moment is worth just under £400 in this country. And in 1905, if I sometimes hold up a gold coin, which has a 1905 date, and I hold it up, and I say, this gold sovereign will buy bed and breakfast in a decent hotel in London, New York, Paris, or Berlin, and it would do so in 1905. It will do so today, and it will do so in 100 years' time, because gold is a preservation of wealth. It's not an investment. It's a preservation of wealth, and that's been proven over 5,000 years. So that is the fundamental being. Now, if I go into a hotel, let's say I'm in Delhi, let's pick a city, Delhi. If I have a gold sovereign in my pocket, I can give that to the concierge and he'll be extremely pleased to accept it for a couple of nights at his lovely hotel. Believe me, I know I've done it. I'm not supposed to take it in. So the thing is, it's a gold, and it would be the same in Montevideo. It would be the same in Paraguay. It doesn't matter where you go. If you have a gold sovereign, it might be a Krugerrand. You know, it doesn't have to be a sovereign, but sovereign is really one of the premier games in town because it's so recognizable. We've got a copy of the Queen's head on it. And it's also legitimate money. It's coin of the realm in this country. So it's very, very interchangeable. And that's why I particularly like gold, and that's why I'm a gold bug. That doesn't make me anti-Bitcoin. I'm very pro-Bitcoin. But it's a question of ticking the boxes that you want as an individual for you and your family.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. We're big believers here at this show, me personally, that gold bugs and Bitcoiners are philosophically aligned and we should be banding together on this fight for sound money in the digital age. And that note, though, going back to like the British law, like in the provenance of Bitcoin, and the fact that if you can't prove provenance, they can confiscate it. Can't their ability to confiscate something that you own? Isn't that illogical inconsistency there?
Yes, you could argue that. But their view, this is not my view, incidentally, their view is, where did it come from? Where is the audit trail? And if you bought it from somebody, what was the audit trail and the provenance from there on? This is the view that they take, so that they can. They say that they can confiscate Bitcoin, you see, from people who are drug dealers or bad people, so on and so forth. This is the sort of thing that they hide behind. It isn't. That's not the reason for it at all. And the reason for it is that so they can stop you getting out of the system. The last thing that they want you to be able to do is to get out of the system. And they say Bitcoin is a way of getting out of the system. And they will pretend it facilitates crime, or potentially could, and therefore you have to then sort that out, that provenance out, with an audit trail. So this is one of the problems that we have. Now, see if I can explain this a bit better. If you put $50,000 or £50,000 in an English bank, in £10 notes, you put it in, right? Okay, and it goes. They are only obliged to give you back that £10,000 or whatever figure you put in, not the same notes. They won't give you the same notes. They'll give you the same number of notes, but not the same notes, if you see the difference. Mm-hmm. They don't have to prove a provenance as long as the bottom line works out. And that is the key to it. So if you have a gold coin or gold bullion, and they want you to say, where did you get it? You can have an audit trail to your bullion dealer, and you can point that out. But you can't do that so easily, certainly with Bitcoin. And that is where the weakness is in your protection against the thieves in the central bank.
Yeah. I wonder, due to the transparency of the ledger, if somebody in the UK wanted to take up this sort of journey of proving provenance of Bitcoin, I feel like it should be possible via the transparency of the ledger. You should be able to say, hey, this Bitcoin was here before I had it and there. But regardless, we don't have to opine on this particular provenance issue, but I do think there are a few things that have happened in the last 6 months that really highlight that the superstructure of the politics and banking is overstepping and really helping people realize how messed up the system is, whether it's Nigel Farage getting his banking services ripped out from under him, or in the last couple of weeks, Russell Brand getting demonetized they're saying reasons, but I think people are really tuning in on, he's been over the target with a lot of what he's been covering and talking about on his show, and the powers that be don't like that he's highlighting how nefarious and corrupt they are, and so they're demonetizing him. And it's instances like this, whether it's Nigel or Russell getting demonetized for having particular points of view, that is really highlighting to the masses, like, oh, they have crazy control over the most important tool that humans use, which is money.
Well, this has been going on for a lot longer than Nigel. They picked on Nigel. They made a mistake because he has a high profile. So they made a mistake. And, of course, they broke their own banking rules. The chief executive of National Westminster Bank and Coutts Bank, who's a subsection. And, of course, it's 38% owned by the government. So you couldn't think of a more stupid way that they've gone around these things. And it was bound to end in tears for them. But of course, they've done this with other people. We have two political parties, one called Britain First and one for Britain, which have had to close down because they weren't allowed a banking facility. And any number of individuals. But those individuals weren't all high profile, and one was high profile, a man called Tommy Robinson, who was the enfant terrible as far as government was concerned, and they did the same thing to him. So this has been going on, to my certain knowledge, for about 10 years. 10 years this has been going on. Suddenly it's come to the fore because of the Nigel Farage flagged it up, because it happened to him. Unlike so often with these things are, if you happen to be a higher profile individual, it matters a lot more if it happens to you. Poor little guy, your Joe Sixpack to get back to, and my man on the Clapham Omnibus, they can do what they like to him because nobody cares, least of all the press. And of course, the great shield, with two great shields to both our nations, the great shields for those two individuals in America and my country, those two great shields, one was the principles of law, which should be a shield for the citizen, not a stick with which to beat him, which it has become in both our countries. So it's the principle of law, and the other is a free press. And we have lost a free press in both our countries. Now, the press works almost directly for the government. We have some very unusual situations as well. So we have the CIA, who has a totally unaudited budget, who can actually buy journalists lock, stock and barrel, not just in your country, but in mine. So let's talk about quickly Syria, for example, when the Syria was in, took over from the Ukraine as a high profile area of conflict. We had this situation where if the CIA produced a press release, the BBC would read out the press release almost instantaneously. There was no checking it. There was no question about checking the verification of it. It was read out as if it was holy fact by very senior journalists in this country, on the BBC. Now, it begs the question, does it not? What is the institutional position between the CIA and the BBC? What actually happens between the CIA and the production team? Why does nobody in mainstream media on television, and your country or mine, ever ask a relevant question? Ever. The only person in your country who's done it was Tucker Carlson. So they chucked him out. They want patsy questions. They want patsy questions, don't they? That's the long and short of it. And in this country, for example, they've closed down Sputnik Radio and they've closed down Russia Today. I don't want to go down the rabbit hole of the Ukraine, but we are not allowed to hear in my country. It's a free country, or what used to be a free country. I can't hear Putin speeches advocating some form of peace negotiation. That's not allowed to appear on my screen or on my radio. This is quite extraordinary. And if you go back to the days of Voltaire, for example, 1700s, he fled to this country because it had a very free, by those standards, a very free system, the land of the free, which is supposed to be America, the land of the free. Long gone, long gone. And of course, it seeped away bit by bit. And without a free press and the protection of law, which is our birthright, there's very, very little that we can do which doesn't involve direct action. You had a civil war in 1861. If I might just correct the terminology, you didn't have a civil war. It wasn't a civil war. The North invaded the South, and I'm not going down the rabbit hole of why or what or how. A civil war is what we had in 1640, which was brother against brother, brother against son, father against wife, because of a different political system. That's a civil war. It wasn't North and South, like you had in America. civil wars. The Spanish had a civil war. There were Republicans, fascists, and communists, brother against brother. That's a civil war. You didn't have one. You had a war between the North and the South, and very upsetting it was, and very unnecessary and very stupid. But that's what it was, not a civil war. Now, what I think is going to I would guess, and it's not for me to say, if you'll excuse my impertinence, I cannot see the United States surviving when you have a state like South Dakota or your own state of Texas and California all wrapped up in the same country. Nothing in common at all. You don't have anything in common at all with those states, California and South Dakota, Texas and Massachusetts. So perhaps states will have to go their own way in order to get fairness and justice for the people, which is what your constitution originally did. That's what your constitution originally protected. There was no question of keeping states in the Union at the point of a bayonet, which is what happened in 1861. You tore up your constitution in 1861.
Yeah, again, you're speaking my language here. It's part of the reason I moved to Texas from the Northeast, is trying to align where I live with the values that I value personally and the ideals that I want to strive for. And I do think COVID, despite the terrible Orwellian nature of the lockdowns and the forced vaccinations, whatever it may be, was terrible. I do think it really incited this trend of states asserting their autonomy from the federal government, which hopefully picks up, and hopefully we do have the original constitution to fall back on in the Republic of Autonomous States, and we get back to that. But that's all the time we have. You have another engagement that you have to get to. We had a quick 40 minutes here. I could go on for hours with you, I feel, but I just want to thank you for all the work that you've done in your position over the decades to really drive these issues to the fore and make people aware of them. And I do think we are at a very interesting point in history where it does seem like that ability to revolt against these encroaching forces, the Davos class, the fascist government and corporations that have teamed up. I do think the environment is bubbling to a point where people are pissed off enough to begin fighting back and taking back their civil liberties.
I do hope so. I do hope so, because America and Great Britain come from the same roots, as it were, the same roots. And if you go back to your 1776, your War of Independence, because you wanted our Bill of Rights. You weren't getting the benefit of our Bill of Rights, and that's what you wanted, and that's what you got in your Constitution. So we're joined at the hip in many ways, and what's good for you is good for us. So we certainly hope over here that you get your house in order, and hopefully will help our house being put in order, which is equally desperate with our open borders here, of course, as well, as you have over there. We have open borders. We don't know where it's going to end. We're run by the WEF, including our king and our prime minister and our chancellor. We have been disenfranchised in the same way that you have. But we have gone through, both our countries have been through bad times, and we've come out the other end. And let's hope we do this time.
Let's hope. You keep fighting the good fight. We'll do so over here. And hopefully we see each other on the other end more free and with more civil liberties. Godfrey, thank you for your time.
A great pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
All right. That's all we got today. Peace and love. Dickie.